you've been searching for that time to get on some sort of a roll here to get that good feeling, and you need a game like this to give you a chance.
We're still struggling to try and score goals night in and night out, but we've been able to do that in the last couple games.
Jets have some life.
It doesn't get any easier, and as the season moves on, the road games get tougher and tougher.
Oh, there's not an easy answer to that.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Ezra, Dave, and Drew on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning, tsn1290.ca and on the iHeartRadio app. Good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning, our NHL season preview spectacular. We're going to look at the Winnipeg Jets for the entirety of the first hour. Jeff Hamilton from the Winnipeg Free Press going to join us in studio to help with that conversation. We're going to preview the other 29 teams in the NHL, looking at the Central Division, the Pacific Division, the Metropolitan Division, and we'll save the Atlantic Division for next Saturday due to time constraints. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us in studio there. If you like what you hear or you hate what you hear, we want to hear from you at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, in studio, joined by Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuke. Gentlemen, good morning. Good to see you both. A happy Saturday to you two fine gentlemen.
Yeah, what's crack-a-lackin', Drew? You ready to go?
I don't even know what crack-a-lackin' means.
You know, just how are you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks.
That's good.
Yeah. Dave, do you have anything on crack-a-lackin'? Anyone near there?
No, that vernacular is out of my... It's not in my glossary, but yeah, I'll...
That's pure Ezzy right there is crack-a-lackin' is what that is?
Yeah, you know, Ezzy's pretty hip to the jive or...
Hip to the scene?
Hip to the scene.
You're wearing your Wu-Tang Jays sweatshirt there, so it's good to see you on the bandwagon.
Hold on, Drew. It's Wu-Jays.
Wu-Jays, pardon me. Yeah. I wasn't sure if it was Wu-Jays or Blue-Tang.
Well, you know, Dave's representing the Blue Jays with the Blue Jays hat. You know, you got to represent the Blue Jays up 2-0 in the series over the Texas Rangers. Let's be honest. They're going to finish it off tomorrow.
Bold statement. Good confidence. Little nervous about it all, but...
Bring that broom to Skydome.
Wow.
Really? Bring the broom, eh?
Or Rogers Center.
As he was in the...
You can call it Skydome.
As he was in the Rogers Center earlier this year. Saw J.A. Happ, as was I, against the Arizona Diamondbacks.
I actually saw Edwin Encarnacion hit a home run, and unlike Gary Lawless yesterday on Hustler and Lawless, I do know what the Ed Wing is.
Yeah, well, you did the Ed Wing. In fact, we were there for the Ed Wing T-shirt giveaway night.
So you guys got Ed Wing T-shirts?
We did not. We weren't one of the first 10,000.
I see.
I don't even think we were one of the first 40,000 fans.
Dave and I went for chicken wings after the game.
Oh, okay. Yes, there you go. And you named your chicken wings Edwin. Is that how it worked?
Yes.
Okay. Good to hear. Anyways, let's get underway and started by looking at the Winnipeg Jets. Of course, as I mentioned, it's our season preview show. This is a Winnipeg Jets. I mean, we still don't know the opening day roster for the Winnipeg Jets. We have a better idea about what some of the pieces are going to be, but we still don't know what it is. And I would say that for the first time in the last 5 years that the team has been back, for the first time, there's still uncertainty and there's still battles taking place. And we heard Paul Maurice speak to it yesterday during his press conference. Today the Jets are going to be in Minnesota. They're going to play the Wild for their final exhibition game. And he says there's guys who have to impress today to either earn a spot on the team or keep a spot on the team if they were with the team, you know, last season. I would say that with the exception of maybe, you know, in years past, there's maybe been one spot where guys have been battling. But today... And with the final exhibition game on the horizon a couple hours from now, you know, 7 o'clock tonight, it's the most competitive training camp they've ever seen. And the Jets themselves are still the internal competition. We've heard them talk about internal competition so often. It still hasn't played itself out for the final roster spots for this Winnipeg Jets team.
Yeah, guys, I don't think there's any doubt that this is the most competitive training camp we've ever seen from the Jets 2.0 in 6 years since they came over from Atlanta. I would definitely say that it has been the most competitive because they have the most depth, whether that's at forward or in goal. Maybe on defense, not so much, but certainly when it comes to the forward group, you have guys like Brandon Tanev trying to push for a spot, right? So I would tend to believe, I know Paul Maurice, you know, you referenced his comments, Drew. I would tend to believe, guys, that going into the last preseason game, the Jets know who their 13 or 14 forwards are going to be. I think at this point, in a one-game situation, if a player has a really good game, I don't think that's going to ultimately determine whether they start on the opening roster. Like, for example, I would expect Kyle Connor and Patrick Laine to already be on the roster. I don't think they really have to use this one game to prove that they belong in the NHL to start the season. But when you're talking about a guy like Brandon Tanev, I think he should make the Jets opening night roster. And partly due to the fact that Sean Mathias is injured right now and Drew Stafford is injured as well, I think, Dave, that gives him an opportunity. But I think for the most part, you know, for example, guys like Chase DeLeo, Nick Petan, those guys aren't going to be on the opening night roster. Those guys are going to go back to the Manitoba Moose. I believe the Jets have to cut 7 more players before October 13th. They're at, 32 right now. So actually that would be 9. So, and Brendan Lemieux is one of those players because he's injured. So it's absolutely competitive, Drew. And, you know, Thursday night against the Edmonton Oilers in Edmonton, the Jets were horrible, but Brandon Tanev scored the Jets' only goal, and it was a beauty. So I think a guy like Brandon Tanev has, you know, made this roster, but I would say that at this point, even though there are all these guys competing for spots and pushing for spots, because of the one-way contracts, Dave, it's going to be very tough for someone who is pegged to play for the Moose to beat out a guy like, for example, Marco Dano or Alexander Burmistrov.
You know, it's interesting. This morning, in the morning papers, I wrote about one of the articles that was written was by Ken Weeb from the Winnipeg Sun, who wrote about that there's 9 players for 2 spots.
Let me interrupt you there. It was actually Ted Wyman.
Sorry, Teddy wrote it.
Want to give Ted credit? Yes. We don't want to give Weber any credit.
Yeah, Weber was making his way to Minneapolis.
Yeah, exactly. Ted wrote that article. It is available on illegalcurve.com.
Yeah. So. And it goes to Drew's point about the competition. And realistically, this will be an embarrassment of riches for the organization simply because you've got so many guys pushing. And you don't have that, by default, veteran player who can just say, yeah, that's my spot. Now you have guys who are from below pushing up into the organization. So, you know, I'm with Ez. I think like a guy like Brandon Tanev has really shown that he could probably stick on this lineup, at least while you've got question marks around Drew Stafford and Sean Mathias. So
both guys who are banged up, who are a little bit injured.
Yeah, it sounds like from what everything Coach Maurice is saying is that Drew Stafford most likely will be available for the
Thursday game against Carolina. Yeah.
So my thought is he's not an issue. Mathias, again, was put into the week-to-week category by the coach, so he most likely will not be.
Well, Stafford, and to your point about Drew Stafford, I mean, Drew Stafford, you know, prior to training camp was sort of thought of as being that second line right winger. So that keeps the Jets' top 6 intact, you know, Ehlers, Scheifele, Wheeler, Laine, Little, Stafford. It's the battle for the bottom 6 spots that is still sort of being played out.
Don't forget that Drew Stafford was the MVP of the Beauty League over in Minnesota.
And you can't put enough emphasis on just how important that the Beauty League summer hockey is for the NHL perspective.
Yeah, the inaugural the Beauty League. So Stafford is the guy who's going to draw back in into the lineup, obviously, when he's healthy.
And same with Sean Mathias, because you don't sign a guy like Sean Mathias if you don't think that he's going. He's not, with all due respect, he's not Quinton Howden. Quinton Howden was a guy who was, you know, iffy to make the Winnipeg Jets from the start, even though they signed him from the Florida Panthers. Sean Mathias, when he got signed as a free agent, was signed to be on the NHL roster, not to be a tweener between the AHL and NHL roster.
Yeah, exactly. So I agree with you, Drew. I think Mathias draws back in when he's healthy. And there really is. I mean, look, you know, Coach Maurice said it as much in his post-game interviews. He said it during his, you know, game day skates or his, you know, skates at training camp, talking about how there aren't guaranteed spots. And so, you know, a guy like Anthony Peluso, I mean, I don't see how Anthony Peluso has a spot on this roster. Chris Thornburg's going to be in tight to have a spot on the roster. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you have all these guys like Adam Lowry, Andrew Kopp. Like, it really is. You can go through that list of names. And now, Coach Maurice loves Adam Lowry. Loves him. Loves his size. Now, that didn't stop him from sending him to the Moose last season, but he's a big fan of Adam. What Adam Lowry does.
Well, and Dave, you know, you guys know that I really like Adam Lowry's game. for Adam Lowry, it's possible that he might have to start the season on the wing. I think both Adam Lowry and Andrew Kopp have had a very strong training camp and preseason, but when you're talking about Andrew Kopp, he was the fourth-line center for much of last year, and Adam Lowry was the third-line center for much of last year. But when you're talking about that third line, it's quite possible that they use either Matthew Perreault or Sean Mathias as a third-line center, because as we know, both of those guys can play center, but they can also play wing. So right now, you're in a situation, if you're going to make this forward group, and we talked about it, because there aren't many spots, and I agree, I think Anthony Peluso is definitely a candidate to be put on waivers. A guy like Chris Thorburn could be the 13th or 14th forward, if you want to call it that, guys. But really, I mean, it's quite possible that you're going to have the entire third line from last year playing on the fourth line. That includes guys like Marco Dano and Alexander Burmistrov. Because Kyle Connor has been so impressive, I mean, would any of us be surprised if he starts the season on the third line? Patrick Laine is probably going to start the season on the second line. So two rookies are taking up spots that were taken by veterans, if you want to call them that, last year. Mm-hmm. And that bumps everybody else down. So if Brandon Tanev does end up making this team, Drew, that means that somebody who was on the team last year isn't going to be on the opening night roster.
And it's all about the internal competition. We'll talk more about the forward groups next segment. I want to look at sort of more, as opposed to looking at individual players, I want to look at the team from sort of the macro perspective. You know, the expectations for the, what are your expectations for this Winnipeg Jets team this season? I'm not asking, you know, do you think they're going to make the playoffs? And we'll talk about that later on in the show when we give our predictions and everything else. But have expectations around the organization changed this year? It's now year six. They've made the playoffs 1 out of 5 years. Most other organizations would be feeling more pressure, I think, to make the organization from the fans. From my perspective, and I could be wrong, there is still an element of we're just happy to be here that still exists in the city of Winnipeg. I know people want to see them make the playoffs, but there is not the overwhelming pressure that goes along with a franchise that struggles year in, year out. I still get the sense that there's people that aren't willing to really criticize the Jets organization yet for only being a playoff team once in the past 5 seasons. Do you get a feeling that that has changed for this year? Do you think there's more pressure on the organization to win than there has been in the first 5 seasons that since the team returned?
You know, Drew, it's a very good question. And, you know, as far as the external pressure, I'm not sure. I mean, certain fans, I think, want this team to really make the playoffs. And then other fans are probably more willing to accept, you know, a year where you don't make the playoffs, knowing that this is a young group. But I think definitely as far as the internal pressure within the Jets organization, I think absolutely this organization wants to make the playoffs this year. And especially when you get a player like Patrick Laine, second overall, he's a generational talent. I mean, if Austin Matthews isn't in the draft, and he was almost eligible for the 2015 draft, Dave.
Yeah, but just 2 or 3 days he missed out on it.
Then Patrick Laine goes first overall. I mean, that he's that good of a prospect, right? So I think that this organization expects to make the playoffs. Now, I don't know if they expect to win the Stanley Cup, Drew, but certainly last year was a huge disappointment, the Jets getting 78 points, finishing last in the Central Division. My expectations, if you're asking me, I think the Jets can make the playoffs this year, and you know it's going to be tough. They happen to be in the toughest division in the entire league, and when you're looking at the other teams in the division, many of those other teams have gotten better. You know, you could argue that maybe Chicago took a step back, and maybe Dallas lost too many defensemen, and maybe St. Louis is going to miss a guy like David Backes and Troy Brouwer, but certainly Nashville's gotten better, Drew.
Mm-hmm.
And so if the Jets are going to make the playoffs, if 5 teams are going to make it from the Central, they have to knock out Minnesota this year. And even if 4 teams make the playoffs, that means that they're going to have to be ahead of a team like Chicago or St. Louis. So it's going to be very tough because of their division. And when they made the playoffs 2 years ago, they were so good within their own division. But last year, they struggled mightily. So for me, the expectations are certainly for this team to compete for a playoff spot. I think they can do better than 78 points. I think the Jets can easily be at that 90-point mark, 90 to 95 points. It's going to depend a lot on how guys like Patrick Laine and Kyle Connor do, especially early in the season, guys. And if you remember last year, I mean, the month of November completely ruined the Jets' season.
Sure.
I think they won 3 games in November.
Well, they started off strong on that opening road trip. The Jets were flying high after the first 2 weeks of the year, and then they went into Montreal on that second half of the back-to-back, and that's where the wheels fell off. That game against Montreal, where I believe the night before they had won in Columbus, they went into Montreal. Carey Price was out of the lineup. They were facing, I think, Mike Condon was in net for the Habs. The Jets got absolutely schmeiced, and that was pretty much the beginning of the end.
So, Dave, I personally like the moves that the Jets made. I like bringing in a guy like Sean Mathias, solidifies that third line, gives you a veteran player there with a lot of younger players like Adam Lowry and Andrew Kopp already in your bottom six. So I think that the Jets can make the playoffs. I don't think it's going to be easy, but I think it's ultimately going to come down to how do you replace Jacob Trouba's minutes, how the goaltending situation sorts itself out, and if your young rookie forwards are able to step in right away and contribute.
Leave it right there. Hold that thought, Dave. We'll come back to you to start. We'll talk about the forwards in more detail on the other end of the break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's our season preview special on TSN 1290.
You're on the curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich, located in the Cordon Village Mall. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. If you're looking for a place to have a great Saturday morning breakfast, maybe you're out and about listening to IC, wanting a place for breakfast, Bernstein's Deli in the Cordon Village Mall definitely gets our recommendation. Remind you, iHeartRadio is now here. TSN 1290 is an iHeartRadio station. So download the free app today. Check us out. Get it through the iTunes store. The iHeartRadio app. Listen to TSN 1290 wherever you may be.
iHeartDeli.
You iHeartDeli. If there was an iHeartDeli app, you could get that too. Instead, there's just an iHeartRadio app as far as I know.
I heart you too, Drew.
I heart you too, Ezzy, there.
Yeah.
Let's continue our conversation looking at the Winnipeg Jets, the season preview, the forward group.
By the way, Dave, I think I made Drew really uncomfortable there.
You made everybody uncomfortable there, really, a little bit.
If there was an HR department in Illegal Curve, we'd be having a conversation.
If there was an HR department in Illegal Curve, we all would have been disbanded a long time ago and made to go to sensitivity training. This is the most talented group of forwards the Winnipeg Jets have ever iced at the start of a season?
I would say so. And I think that has a lot to do with the fact that you've got two highly heralded rookies in Kyle Connor and Patrick Laine coming into the NHL. Certainly, Drew, 2 or 3 years from now, the Jets are going to be right up there with the Edmonton Oilers and the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Calgary Flames as far as having all of these great first-round picks in there. You can throw Nikolai Ehlers as a guy who you forget is only 20 years old. So I do think it's the most talented group of forwards the Jets have already had. I think in years past, guys, if someone like Brandon Tanev, who played 4 years in college and was playing like this, was competing for a spot, I don't think there would be any doubt that Brandon Tanev would be on the roster. But because you've got other players in that bottom six that you don't really know where they fit in, and we've talked about that last segment, guys like Marco Dano, who came over in the Andrew Ladd trade, mm-hmm. guys like Alexander Burmistrov, who you don't really know where they fit in, Andrew Kopp, guys like this, Joel Armia. I mean, it's realistic, guys, with Drew Stafford out of the lineup and Sean Mathias out of the lineup. A guy like Joel Armia starts the season on the second line.
Well, let me interrupt you right there. So I think based on what Paul Maurice has said so far, and Dave, you've heard more of the press conferences, it sounds like Stafford will be back to fill that second line right wing role in time for Thursday. So you got a clear top line of Ehlers, Scheifele, and Wheeler.
Yeah.
Then you got a pretty clear second line of Laine, Little, and Stafford.
I don't know if I'd go that far.
Go on.
I think he's going to go. I could be wrong.
I think Armia could be on that third line.
No, I actually.
But I'm playing second line.
I'm not worried so much about how to define a second and third line, but I'm just saying my vision right now, based on what he's doing, is Stafford.
Sorry, second line is
Little, Kyle Connor.
So you have Connor as playing with playing on the left side with Little and Stafford, based on your mock line.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying, and I could actually see Perreault, right now the way he's got it, and
he
Matthew
being Paul Maurice.
Could be Perreault, Laine, Armia.
That's what Matthew Perreault said yesterday post skate, is that was, because obviously that was the line they used in Edmonton.
Sure.
It's a line they're going to use probably today in Minnesota. So my suspicion is because Perreault is a facilitator, he's a passer, right? So he is going to get, and Laine is a shooter. So really you need to, not to suggest that Brian Little isn't either. Obviously Brian Little's very good at passing, but I just think that Perreault could really do wonders with those two.
They could work magic together.
Potentially. So you know, whether it sticks with those three long term, I don't know. But well, but Matthew Perreault did allude to the fact that he sees that as his line moving forward.
Line A, Perreault in the middle, Armia on the right side. That leads me to my question. Have you seen enough from Joel Armia in preseason, in training camp, and last season that leaves you with no doubt that he's one of the 12 forwards on this Winnipeg Jets team?
You know what? I've changed my tune quite a bit on Joel Armia. I think
you're not a very good singer to begin with.
I don't think that there's any doubt in my mind. Not only is he top 12 forward, I think he's a top 9 forward. And
Even with a healthy Sean Matthias?
Yes.
Really? And go on, expand on that, please.
Well, I mean, you look at Joel Armia, and you know, we know he's a first-round pick, and he came over in the Evander Kane trade. He wasn't one of the key pieces, but he still was a significant piece coming over with Brendan Lemieux and that first-round pick, of course, that was used on Jack Roslovic. But when you're talking about Armia, he's a guy that played a little bit in the AHL last year with the Moose, and then he came up with the Jets, and I think he got into just under 40 games. And, you know, he didn't put up big numbers, but especially at the end of the season, guys, when the Jets were struggling and he was given more opportunity, as opposed to just playing 8 or 10 minutes on the fourth line, he was playing on the third line for the Jets. And I think he is a guy that has that good combination of size and speed. He's a guy that isn't afraid to go in the corners and get physical. I think he's a perfect match to play with Matthew Perreault and Patrick Laine or Kyle Connor. And to Dave's point, Kyle Connor has outplayed Patrick Laine in training camp. I think everyone was expecting Patrick Laine to score 4 or 5 goals in the preseason. But Kyle Connor's got the 3 goals. Patrick Laine doesn't have a single point. I'm not saying that we should be worried at all about Patrick Laine, but I'm just saying that, you know, Dave, you know, says Kyle Connor might start the season on the second line. Well, first off, the line combinations for Game 1 aren't going to be the same line combinations for Game 10. It's going to take a while for the Jets to establish who really has chemistry with who, Drew, because all we really know is that Ehlers, Scheifele, and Wheeler are going to stick together. I mean, the Schwelers line, that's staying together, but as far as the second line, the only certainty is that Brian Little is going to play center on that second line, and as far as the wingers go for the majority of the season, your guess is as good as mine. I would agree that I would expect Drew Stafford to probably be on that second line when he's healthy. But as far as whether it's Patrick Laine or Kyle Connor, I think that remains to be seen. But certainly I think Matthew Perreault is going to center that third line.
I think that speaks to the Jets having a problem, quote-unquote, that they've never had before, is that they have too many – again, this isn't a real problem, but they have more options to move up guys up and down the lineup than they've ever had in years past. Because in years past, really, the roles have been so – you know, confirmed. You've never had a third line that really had a significant offensive touch to it. And your fourth line has always been sort of a laggard that might play 6, 7, 8 minutes a game. Is this the year now that you see Paul Maurice rolling the four lines more significantly so that he isn't relying solely on that top line or the top six to be the drivers of the offense on this team?
Well, that's why I said I don't think it matters whether you call it a second or third line, because I think, like, if you have that Perreault, Laine, Armia, and you have Little, Stafford, and Kyle Connor, you know, either one of those in combinations could do some damage against the opposition, right? And realistically, you know, you could say, oh, are you really going to put Laine on the third line? Well, you know, doesn't that give him an opportunity to play against a lot weaker defense, right? So that perhaps will set him up for a lot of success early on, which could potentially give him, you know, I'm not saying he needs confidence. The kid actually doesn't lack for confidence. So, but, you know,
but you play
NHL success.
You play against worse competition, you'd expect better results.
That's right, exactly. So, I you know, again, like I said, I think it's an embarrassment of riches right now for the Jets on forward. And, you know, from the organization's perspective, they're sitting there saying, this is a good problem to have players and have to slot them in and try and figure it out. So I don't think Coach Maurice and his coaching staff are too upset about having to send players back to the Moose, because the reality is, you know, whoever they're sending back is probably a good enough player to take a spot eventually. And Coach Maurice did say that. He said that, you know, this is not a permanent job opportunity. You're not getting this and saying, okay, well, that, you know, you've managed to get it out of training camp. You have it now for 82 games. The reality is there are very good players that are going to be with the Moose, on the top lines of the Moose, who are going to be playing big minutes with the Moose and be getting, you know, a lot of opportunity to kind of show what they can do in the AHL, which, as we all know, is usually a recipe for success in the NHL. So it's not like you're going to be able to sit at rest on your laurels.
Let me ask you guys this question. As I'll start with you on this. Is Alex Burmistrov one of your 13 forwards on the Winnipeg Jets, at, you know, when Thursday's opening game rolls around? And if so, why?
Well, they could go with 14 forwards.
Sure,
as well,
okay.
Right?
But is he with the Winnipeg Jets organization?
I do think.
Or
they,
is he with the Winnipeg Jets team as opposed to the organization?
I do think that he cracks the opening night roster, but I wonder where Alexander Burmistrov fits in, because if you're talking about that third line, I mentioned Matthew Perreault. Most of last season was Adam Lowry as the third line center, and then you had Andrew Kopp as the fourth line center. Well, if Alexander Burmistrov is not centering that third line, and then you have a combination of Patrick Laine, Joel Armia, possibly Drew Stafford, Kyle Connor on the wings there, well, does Alexander Burmistrov fit in as the fourth line center or maybe a winger on the fourth line? I think he might be suited for a wing position on the fourth line, because I think that the Jets want Andrew Kopp to be their fourth line center. He's gotten better on faceoffs, and then if Adam Lowry moves to wing, you have the ability to also play him at center. So as far as Burmistrov goes, Drew, I don't think he's particularly been that great at training camp, but I think because he's on a one-way contract, they'd probably have to put him on waivers, and I think he would be claimed on waivers. I think he'll make the team, and that's why I think Anthony Peluso is a better bet to be placed on waivers. But look at, guys, the Jets have a lot of forwards in camp right now. I think they still have 20, if I'm not mistaken, and that includes Brendan Lemieux. So the Jets are going to have to make a move here, whether that's making a minor trade or putting someone on waivers or sending someone down to the AHL, like a guy like Marco Dano. I'm not saying he's going to be sent down, but they do have some moves to make. There are just too many bodies in camp right now.
Let's hold it there. When we come back, Jeff Hamilton's going to join us. We'll talk about the defense. We'll talk about the Trouba factor. We'll talk about the left side of the Jets' defense. We'll also deal with goaltending and special teams. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's our season preview show on TSN 1290. Pavlik, Hutchinson, Hellebuck, Hellebuck, Hutchinson, Pavlik.
Hamilton, Hutchinson, Pavlik.
Jeff Hamilton from the Winnipeg Free Press joins us here in studio now for the next 30 minutes as we continue our Winnipeg Jets preview for this upcoming season. The big question, we talked about the forwards having, you know, the forward problem, having too many forwards, not the end of the world, because you play, in the course of a game, you play 12 forwards at a time. Having too many goaltenders, more of an issue, because you can only play one goalie at a time. The Jets, of course, have three goaltenders, Hutchinson, Hellebuck, Pavlik. Hellebuck, the only one of the three that has an easy path to return to the AHL, if that was the course of action the Winnipeg Jets chose. Let me ask you guys this. Of the three, Jeff, we'll start with you. Of the three, is Connor Hellebuck the best goaltender the Winnipeg Jets have on their roster? And if they don't start with him, are they committing self-sabotage before the season gets underway?
Hmm. Answer to question number one, yes. I mean, clearly is the best goaltender in this group. I mean, he's still very much fresh, you know, as far as a professional. But that being said, he's posted arguably the best numbers amongst the three. I think he's proven to be the future of this team, and it's been talked about for weeks how, you know, through this goalie debate that just seems to be endless, mm-hmm. that this guy is going to be, you know, he could be very much sent to the moose. And you know, it really, I think for me, self-sabotage, I don't know if that's the word. I think it might be, we don't know what's in the heads of those, you know, those GMs and the people up in the big chairs for the Jets and what they envision this year looking like. And I don't know if it's necessarily, I don't necessarily agree with sending him to the AHL, but I don't know if I necessarily disagree with it either, in the sense that development is important, and it's something that if you don't think your team, I don't necessarily think if it's, you don't think your team's going to compete, but Connor Hellebuck is going to need to play. So if you don't plan on playing him up here.
Well, let me stop you right there. If you're not playing him, mm-hmm. and I agree with you that he's the best goalie on the roster, why aren't you playing him? You're paying Andrei Pavlik whatever you're paying him this year regardless. Doesn't matter if he plays for the Winnipeg Jets. It doesn't matter if he plays for the Manitoba Moose. Doesn't matter if he plays in the ECHL. He's getting paid that amount of money already. Shouldn't you just think of that as a sunk cost, because it is, and just play your best goaltender, the goaltender that gives you the best chance to win night in and night out? Though I'm not saying play him 82 games, because obviously that's not realistic. But shouldn't the salaries and the financial commitments almost be irrelevant to the question at this stage in the game? The Andrei Pavlik signing, when they signed him years ago, was a bad signing. But it's been done with. Why compound a mistake by not playing your best goaltender if it's a financial, if it's the only reason for doing so is a financial reason?
See, I don't think that is the reason. I don't think contracts or financial reasons have anything to do with the decision. I think that's to do everything with development, and like you said, if it's playing time that is key, and you're right, he has the statistics to do it. I personally think the fear of putting Michael Hutchinson on waivers is the most ridiculous argument that we've made throughout the last few weeks. I don't know a team out there who is all of a sudden going to see Michael Hutchinson on the waiver wire and think, wow, this is going to be my number two goalie.
Most teams are set in goal barring an injury at this stage in training camp.
Absolutely. And those two guys, I think it's important. I mean, people have bashed Andrei Pavlik, and I know he hasn't had the greatest tenure here, and that's fair assessment. I mean, they're dealing with facts. They're dealing with numbers that suggest he is a backup goalie. But I also think that Connor Hellebuck hasn't had an 82-game season and hasn't proven to be a starting goaltender. He's still very much young, and I think a battle between those two guys, a guy who needs to sell himself this year. Let's face it, Andrei Pavlik is not going to be extended a contract by the Winnipeg Jets this season. He's going to be fighting for his life. So I think that's a good goalie battle to have. And I think if both guys can figure it out this season, it could be a pretty good 1A, 1B system.
Yeah, Drew, I'm going to have to agree with Jeff here. And, you know, it isn't really about the salary in this situation. You have three goaltenders who want to be the number one goaltender for the Winnipeg Jets, because the Jets, let's be honest, guys, don't have a number one goaltender right now. They have three good goaltenders, who two of which are going to split the games this year. We saw it last year. Hutchinson had 30, Pavlik had 33, Connor Hellebuck had 26, and when he started to struggle, the Jets sent him down to the American Hockey League. But I think Jeff nailed it on the head there. I think this is about development, and you have Eric Comrie down in the AHL. Eric Comrie is going to be an NHL goaltender one day, guys. And as far as Connor Hellebuck goes, he's also going to have a great NHL career. So I look at it like Andrei Pavlik is not getting sent down. I think he would clear waivers, or there is a good chance he would clear waivers. But sure. I don't know. The AHL is a developmental league. Andrei Pavlik doesn't have any developing to do. He's in the last year of a contract. By the way, I don't agree with you on that being a bad contract. I think at the time, Andrei Pavlik was the best option the Jets had in net, and he was the guy that got the Jets into the playoffs. I think maybe he hasn't been as good as the Jets wanted him to be, but you forget, you know, Andrei Pavlik, guys, has those shutouts towards the end of the 2014-15 season. If he doesn't play like an amazing goaltender, the Jets don't even get into the playoffs.
He gets full credit for having that the run at the end of the year 2 years ago to get the Jets in the playoffs. I'm not taking that away from him, but the numbers, other than that, you know, that stretch, other than that smaller sample size, the numbers do say that he's not a bona fide NHL starting goaltender.
Yes, and I agree with that, and I would put him probably third on the depth chart if we're going by his numbers, his even strength save percentage or his overall save percentage. He had a bad year last year. There's no doubt about that. But I think from the Jets' perspective, it's between Michael Hutchinson and Connor Hellebuck as the second goalie, not Andrei Pavlik. And I think, you know, we were talking about it two nights ago on the post-game show with Rick Ralph, you know, name drop, but, you know, a lot of fans don't like to hear that Connor Hellebuck's going to start the season with the Manitoba Moose, Drew, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to finish the year with the Manitoba Moose.
I would take that same point or that same concept, Ezzy, and I'd flip it on its side. Why can't Connor Hellebuck, or why doesn't Connor Hellebuck start the year with the Winnipeg Jets in a timeshare, in a split, either with Michael Hutchinson or Andrei Pavlik, more likely Andrei Pavlik? Why doesn't he start in a timeshare with him, and if he can't keep up his end of the bargain, then go down to the Manitoba Moose for additional seasoning? I'm just not sure what benefit Connor Hellebuck gets by starting the year with the Manitoba Moose, as opposed to starting the year with the Winnipeg Jets in a timeshare with Andre Pavlik or with Michael Hutchinson if they decide to really shock the fan base.
Well, to throw a further kink into the argument or the conversation, you know, Ken Weeb did ask him, Paul Maurice, whether there would be a potential to have all three goalies up with the Winnipeg Jets, which, sure, of course, the Jets bench boss said possibly, but he, of course, he wouldn't, you know, show his hand. I wrote about this on Illegal Curve a couple weeks ago, and I was talking about this, the, you know, which goalie should be with the Jets to start the season. And statistically, there's no question that that Connor Hellebuyck is the best goaltender with the Jets. I mean, if you look at the numbers from last season, they all played roughly the same number of games in most of the categories that matter to goaltenders. You know, where is it? So you got best. He had the best goals against average, best overall save percentage, best 5-on-5 save percentage, best adjusted goals against save goals against average. And there's a new stat with goaltending. It's called goals saved above average. And basically, it's you take the league's average save percentage and apply it to the amount of shots a particular goalie has faced. And then it kind of averages out what they would, you know, how they would do. If you're in the positive, that's a good thing. Connor Hellebuyck was the only goaltender of the three that finished in the positive in that stat.
Sure.
So, I mean, his numbers are no question. Now, he's young, but he's not that young. He's 23.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you've got a guy who's probably ready to take on the mantle. He's pretty mature. Like I talked to him a fair bit, and he's pretty aware of what's going on. And you know, none of these goalies really want to make waves. Like Jeff was, I don't know if Jeff was there yesterday, but like a lot of the guys were talking about how you know, they're still friends, and it's a competition. They still all have to compete.
They're saying
all
the right things.
Yeah, of course, which is what is to be expected. And I understand what your point is. You're saying, look, if you've already spent the money, why does it matter where that money is? If you want to win, I mean, if you think about it, every organization's objective is to win, to make the playoffs and win the Stanley Cup. And part of that is development. And you've developed Connor Hellebuyck in the minors now for a couple of seasons. Is it not time for him to take the mantle? We've had the opportunity. Coach Maurice has evaluated these three goaltenders this entire training camp. There's still, you know, a few more days to go. And really, I mean, again, if you base it on last season, Connor Hellebuyck has proven that he deserves to be in the NHL. Now, in terms of the numbers, maybe the Jets wish that it was next year in that regard so they could just say, you know, Pavlik will most likely move on, and then they would have Hellebuyck and Hutchinson, and you'd have Eric Comrie with the Moose really being the guy with the Moose, and then, you know, you have decisions there. But it's not next season, so they're going to have a tough call. I don't know what they're going to do, but I think that Hellebuyck has done what he needs to do to prove that he can be an NHL goaltender.
And guys, I don't think anybody is going to sit here and say that Connor Hellebuyck isn't ready to play in the NHL. He's been one of the best goalies in the AHL for the last 2 years, but you forget, he's only 23 years old. He's only played 26 NHL games. He is still developing, and it goes back to my point earlier. I know there are a lot of Jets fans out there who it's tough for them to swallow the fact that Connor Hellebuyck isn't going to start the season in the NHL, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he isn't going to be called up either in November or December and play significant games for the Jets. You have three guys that are on one-way contracts. Well, Connor Hellebuyck technically isn't because he's on his entry-level deal, so he can be sent down. But because you have three NHL goaltenders in training camp right now, someone isn't going to start the season on the opening night roster unless the Jets go with three starting goalies. But you have to remember that Andre Pavlik is still the guy until someone has so much experience and earns that role. So,
well, I mean, but to your, I mean, you talk about the guy. I mean, Andre Pavlik has not proven numbers wise. If you look at performance,
but he's played a full year in the NHL, Drew.
Great. I mean, so no one's saying that Connor Hellebuyck needs to come in and play 82 games by himself. But I don't see any detriment to Connor Hellebuyck, you know, playing four, you know, even if they split it even 41 games each. I don't see how that affects Connor Hellebuck's development negatively.
No, absolutely. And here's why I think Connor Hellebuyck is going to be with this team, is going to stay with this team, is going to have an impact on this team this year, is because if Connor Hellebuyck is your future goaltender, you do not keep him in the AHL, let what would, I guess, be Andre Pavlik being your guy expire, essentially, and then bring up Connor Hellebuyck after, you know, living life in the American Hockey League. I think you give him the chance to ease into a starting role this season. So next year, when he's clearly the number one guy, you know, barring any kind of crazy trade that the Jets get, he's comfortable and he's capable of taking over that role.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I just don't understand how not that they need to justify it to the fan base, but if, you know, if they were to choose to send Connor Hellebuyck down, they'll make the argument, they being the Jets organization, but it will ring hollow, at least to my ears, because I can't understand what benefit it is to the Winnipeg Jets on the ice to go with a goaltending tandem that's not their best possible goaltending tandem.
Right, and I don't disagree with you, Drew. And by the way, I'm not saying that Andrei Pavlik is the best goaltender of the three. I think Connor Hellebuyck should start the season with the Jets. I'm just saying, don't be surprised if Connor Hellebuyck starts the season with the Moose because of the fact that I don't think that they'll carry three goaltenders. Most NHL teams do not carry three goaltenders on their opening night roster.
Which goes back to Jeff's point of what's the big... I mean, the odds of Michael Hutchinson getting claimed, sure, there's a risk, but... I mean,
well, that's the thing. It'll be Hutchinson or Hellebuyck, and I think before training camp started, I would have said 100% it'll be Hutchinson. But Andrei Pavlik's been good in the preseason, and knowing the Jets and what their plans are as far as developing their goalies go, it's just, all I'm saying is don't be surprised if it's Hellebuyck over Hutchinson.
But with all due respect to Michael Hutchinson, if he gets claimed on waivers, I mean, so be it. Michael Hutchinson, I mean, he was good for the Winnipeg Jets a couple years ago, but I think he's clearly cemented his ceiling as a backup NHL goaltender.
I think with Ez's point, though, it's not so much whether or not he starts with the Winnipeg Jets, but that the fact that I think he believes he's going to end with the Winnipeg Jets by the end of the season. So really, if you're having this tug of war of who you're going to pick, and if you're concerned about Michael Hutchinson getting picked up, whether or not you agree with that, it's easier to send a guy like Connor Hellebuyck down for might be a few weeks, who knows, and then figure this whole situation out and bring him back up. Because I think at the end of the day, Connor Hellebuck's going to play a big role on this team this year, and that's just going to be, you know, it's going to just blend into the future of where Winnipeg Jets find their crease.
You know, I don't think Connor Hellebuyck did himself any favors by the way he played Thursday. I wouldn't say that a lot of those goals were his fault, Drew, because there were a couple of breakaways.
The entire
there.
Team was terrible on but Thursday.
I moved out of my seat when Connor McDavid made that move. You know,
I'm just saying, Hellebuyck didn't have a very good game Thursday.
And my perspective would be to not put too much stock into one preseason contest.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Before we go to break, we're going to come back. We'll talk about the defense. Jeff Hamilton in studio from the Winnipeg Free Press. A tweet from Ted Wyman. Drew Stafford, Sean Matthias, Brendan Lemieux, they're all skating on their own today before the before the Jets game day skate. So those three players on the ice getting closer to full health to return to the Winnipeg
Jets.
Not playing tonight, but skating on their own. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look at the Winnipeg Jets defense. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Legal Curve Hockey Show returns. Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Ten minutes before the top of the hour, coming up at 10 o'clock, Kevin Allen of USA Today joins us to talk about the NHL's Eastern Conference. Our good friend Jeff Hamilton from the Winnipeg Free Press, nice enough to drop by and join us in studio. Jeff going to be pulling double duty, of course, as he's going to be covering the Bombers and the Lions. Blue Bomber game day coming up at 1 o'clock this afternoon. Bombing Westwood, Walby here in studio getting you set for the Bombers and the Lions. BC sucks, as the old saying goes. At least it used to go that saying at the old stadium. I'm not sure if it does at IG Field, but hopefully they'll get that chant going if things are going well for the Bombers. Let's continue our look at the Winnipeg Jets, our season preview, the defense for the Jets. And, of course, the defense for the Winnipeg Jets, you have to start with the left side. And the hole left by Jacob Trouba and his holdout or his contract dispute or his hissy fit, whatever you want to call it. That left side of the Winnipeg Jets defense, it's clear now that that's really Josh Morrissey's spot. Anybody disagree with that assessment? Let's start with that. Is Josh Morrissey, for reasons primarily Jacob Trouba related, made the Jets as that second pairing left side defenseman?
No, I don't. Well, yes, he's made the team. I wouldn't pencil him in right now as the second pairing defenseman, Drew, and this is why I think, and Shane Knighty was talking about this yesterday on Hustler and Lawless, Josh Morrissey is still a rookie defenseman in the NHL. And you can ask Dave, because Dave watched more of the Moose last year, but I thought Josh Morrissey's game really developed last year in the AHL. From the beginning of the season until the end of the season, Josh Morrissey was a much better defenseman. So I think Josh Morrissey has made the opening night roster, guys, but I would expect a guy like a Ben Chiarot to be more of a lock to play in a top four role right now. And that's just because he has more NHL experience. And don't get me wrong, Ben Chiarot struggled on Thursday night. I think he struggled at times in training camp. But Josh Morrissey right now, Drew, to put him in a second pairing role where he's going up against other teams' second lines, you know, second best group of forwards, I think is asking a lot of Josh Morrissey. And it's not that Josh Morrissey can't handle it, but I don't think you want him to put him in a situation, you know, in his rookie year where he's playing 22 minutes a game, you know, he's playing 3 or 4 minutes a night on the penalty kill. I think you probably want to ease him in on the third pair. But because, as you mentioned, Jacob Trouba isn't in the lineup, hey, maybe Josh Morrissey, they throw him right into the fire and he starts on the second pair.
Baptism by fire, because with all due respect to Ben Chiarot, I know that he's played more NHL games, but has Ben Chiarot shown you more than Josh Morrissey, or shown you enough to say that Ben Chiarot can be a second pairing defenseman against other teams' second lines?
I think so. I think he's had an opportunity to show more. Whether or not he's proven that, I guess, is debatable. But, you know, Josh Morrissey, I think, becomes a guy capable of playing in that top four position just based on the player he is. He's a little bit more offensively gifted. I think there's, as much as it is tougher to play against, obviously, better competition, there's also a parallel between playing against those style of players versus playing against checkers, playing against guys that are going to, you know, doing the old dump and chase that people now seem to hate. But you know what? Josh Morrissey is faster this year. He had a weird off season last year where he gained a bunch of weight. He thought he needed to gain weight. He gained it in the wrong places. Had a little bit of a sluggish start. Obviously didn't work out with the Jets. Figured it out over the Moose. Played a large role with the Moose. And now he's expected to play that role with the Jets. And it's kind of, like you said, baptism by fire. It's been sped up by the fact that Jacob Trouba's, you know, doesn't have a contract right now. And I think you do kind of have to throw him in there. I think he is a guy who's capable of having that top four. And if he can't do that, well then, yeah, make him, you know, put him down in the left side in the top six.
You know, Dave, I want to hear what you have to say. I just want to quickly say, if Josh Morrissey does start the season on the second pair, I would especially be worried if it's with Buff, because when you're talking about Buff, we saw that on Thursday night where Buff likes to go for a skate and he likes to take those chances, and that's what makes Dustin Byfuglien so dangerous offensively. But if you're going to pair Morrissey up with Buff, I would be very worried if I was Paul Maurice or Charlie Huddy, who looks after the defense. If they do go with him, I would expect him to probably be paired up with Tyler Myers.
You're saying because of the defensive deficiencies?
Well, Tyler Myers is more responsible defensively than Buff is. Right. So then you put Tobias Enstrom with Byfuglien on your top pair, and then the second pair is Morrissey and Myers. But again, guys, I think right now, you know, we might be a little bit too preoccupied with the first and second pair, because to start the season, you know, whether it's Ben Chiarot, you know, whether it's a guy like Paul Postma, who's a right shot defenseman, but right now Jacob Trouba not being there just leaves a huge hole, Dave. And they're going to have to figure out, is it going to be a combination of a couple of defensemen that pick up those minutes? Is it going to be Morrissey and Chiarot? Are they going to kind of rotate those guys on the second pair? I think that's a big question heading into the season.
Yeah, and I'm with you guys. I think that you can slot Morrissey into that top pairing. And whether it's with Byfuglien or Myers, it's questionable, because, you know, Byfuglien has a comfort factor definitely playing with Tobias Enstrom. There's no question those guys are very familiar with each other and enjoy playing together. You know, Coach Maurice has played him with both Myers and Byfuglien throughout the preseason, so there's obviously potential for either one. And the reality is, like, I think that, you know, so you don't play him in a PK role. You maybe throw in Ben Chiarot when it comes to the PK and maybe take Morrissey out of that. So, you know, as he's developing, as he's learning and playing the NHL game, because there's no question he picked up his game last season, as Jeff said, with the Moose last year. But the NHL is a different animal. It's a totally different animal, different players, different caliber. So, you know, maybe you have to get him in. You have to get Josh Morrissey. If he's going to get that opportunity, there's no better time than right now for Josh Morrissey. I mean, you know, while fans bemoan what happens to Jacob Trouba and the loss of him, and you can't say that it isn't a huge loss for the Winnipeg Jets. There's no question it is. But, you know, it's a big opportunity. It's a big bullseye for Josh Morrissey to say, here's my chance this season to do what I need to do to make an impact at the NHL level.
And, Jeff, he has had a strong training camp. That opportunity that was given to him didn't necessarily mean that he just has a spot on the second pair. He's earned it. He's played, I think, 5 preseason games, and he's been paired up with both Tyler Myers and Dustin Byfuglien. They're probably trying to see who he works better with. But when you look at what he's done, it's not just, you know, the offensive game. He can skate. He thinks the game really well, and I think that's what Dave's talking about. I think he really matured as a defenseman in the AHL. Last year when he was with the Jets in training camp, he looked kind of lost. But this year, he looks like a guy who really wants to be in the NHL this year.
And don't think for a second that the, you know, GM Kevin Sheliloff isn't taking calls trying to figure out if he can get that left-hand defenseman to replace that spot. I mean, the interest in Jacob Trouba is only going to continue to get higher and higher as the season gets closer. I mean, we're less than a week away before the first games. Teams are trying to figure out their lineup. They're seeing where, you know, their cap space is, and we'll make a bid for him. So if the Jets are able to get a deal that they like, and obviously the asking price right now is a left-handed defenseman, we may be debating whether or not, you know, Morrissey makes this team.
You're talking about the asking price for Trouba.
Yeah.
Could you not make the argument that Kevin Cheveldayoff should be looking at other teams, you know, the guys who are sort of fringe guys on a lot of the other rosters, might lose a guy through waivers who might want to just, you know, get a late round draft pick for a guy who can sort of add more depth to that to the bottom of the Winnipeg Jets defense? Because you look at the bottom of the Jets defense, even take Josh Morrissey sort of out of the picture a little bit, but you look at that bottom pairing of, you know, you're talking guys like Mark Stewart, you're talking about guys like Paul Postma,
yep,
guys who we sort of know what they are, with all due respect to both of them.
Well, and those are going to be your 6th, 7th, 8th defensemen. Whether the Jets go with 13 forwards or 14 forwards, that's going to ultimately determine if they go with 7 or 8 defensemen, right? But I would expect Mark Stewart and Brian Strait to be the 7th and 8th defensemen, and Paul Postma, I think, has earned that spot on the right side of the third pairing.
Well, so, but, I mean, you're going to need, you know, you're going to get bad matchups for your third pairing defense at some point in time, and if the Jets' third pairing defense is Paul Postma and Mark Stewart, or Paul Postma and Brian Strait, or Paul Postma and Ben Chiarot, or whatever it is, I mean, that's
going I don't think Ben Chiarot and Paul Postma is that bad of a third pairing. I think, you know, Drew, first of all, you know, the Jets, we've talked about this for how many years now, the Jets really lack a shutdown defenseman on the left side, right? They have enough guys that can score from the back end. The big issue for the Jets isn't going to be scoring. It's going to be how this team plays defensively. Hold on a second, okay, Drew. And I agree with you. I mean, I don't think that the third pair is the best third pair, but when you're talking about Tobias Enstrom, Tyler Myers, Dustin Byfuglien, Josh Morrissey, I mean, there's a lot of talent on the back end. So I think the Jets are going to be fine defensively, but certainly if they don't have a replacement for Jacob Trouba in the lineup, and, you know, the Oilers signed Chris Russell yesterday, yeah, I think he would have looked really nice in the top four. So, I mean, I agree with Jeff. I think that there's a possibility the Jets do make a move, whether that's trading Jacob Trouba or trading one of their surplus forwards to get a veteran defenseman in. I haven't been that impressed with Brian Strait in training camp. I don't think, you know, he's much better than a seventh defenseman. Like, I would have taken Adam Pardy, for example, over Brian Strait. But, you know, I think that right now the Jets do have some real question marks on defense. Jacob Trouba leaves a big hole without him. Well, not having him in the lineup leaves a big hole.
That's sort of what I was getting at. I mean, with you're looking at the guys who are going to fill your 5-6 role, I think the Jets would be a lot more comfortable if those guys were maybe your guys who are in the press box more often. I mean, we've seen Paul Postma. We know what Paul Postma can do. If Paul Postma was going to be a bona fide regular NHLer, I think it would have happened by now.
This is the year, though. This is it.
Every year
he's actually had a strong training camp.
Right, he has, and he you know, you're right. I mean, there has been years where is this the year? But this is essentially, is this the year? His contract is up at the end of the season. Sure. He, you know, this is a guy who was drafted by Atlanta. So it's now or never. So you got to think he's motivated. I'm not saying he shouldn't have been motivated in years past, but he's had that camp that he's proven himself. And this year we'll say a lot about him.
Many unanswered questions that will be determined when the season begins for the Winnipeg Jets up front, in goal, and on the back end. We, of course, will stay abreast of all the breaking news and all the analysis here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
I love having Jeff in studio. We got to have Jeff in studio more.
Okay, sounds like a plan. Jeff, you're in for more, right?
Booked,
good. Kevin Allen of USA Today coming up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's where you can get us in studio if you like. Facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
thrilled to welcome back to the program Kevin Allen of USA Today. Kevin joins us each and every year right around this time as part of our season preview show. We'll look at the NHL's Eastern Conference with Kevin. Kevin, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. You know, that's one thing we never hear in America, the words, and welcome back to the second hour of our hockey show.
We got 3 hours here, so you know, we got lots of airtime to fill.
Yeah, no, and you know, that's why I love Canada. Just you know, for that reason, we don't celebrate the sport quite like Canadian media do.
No, wait till we're going to start our college football show right after this. It'll be 5 hours of college football.
Well, we do have a lot of those in America.
That so. You certainly do. Kevin, obviously, we appreciate you joining us on this Saturday morning, looking at the NHL's Eastern Conference for the upcoming 2016-17 season. Have to start where we left off, and that's with the Stanley Cup champion Pittsburgh Penguins. The Penguins really kept their roster the same entering this season. No real changes from last year, the team that obviously won the Stanley Cup. Are they good enough, you know, to repeat? You look at them and you look at the incredible run they went off on towards the end of the year, and of course it culminated with them lifting the cup. Are they built to repeat, to be the first repeat team in almost 20 years in the NHL?
Well, I mean, I don't think anybody is built to repeat. I just think it's very difficult in a salary cap era to do that. But saying that, I think probably they have a better shot than most, because, you know, that team really didn't come together until, you know, the arrival of Sullivan and sort of the change of attitude and the way they played the game. And I think because of that, it still has a freshness to it. You know, there's no staleness there. I think there's a little bit of a hunger factor there. And the fact that they had merged some younger players, you know, guys like Connor Sheary and so forth, you know, into that mix. Well, you know, those younger players are still trying to find their place on that team as well. So, you know, it's not your typical championship team. I think, you know, they were just sort of exploring the depths of their ability when they won that cup last season. So for that reason, I think they're a little unique. And then I can't believe I'm saying this, but at age 29, Sidney Crosby, you know, keeps improving. Like, you know, when you watched him in the World Cup, as I did, you know, it was almost like he was a player in his, you know, at 23 or 24, who was just, you know, seemed to be getting better every time you watched him. And I think that's what makes him great, is the fact that even at, you know, starting in the second half of his career, he still looks like a player who's, you know, finding another level in which, you know, he can dominate. So, you know, I'm bullish on this team. I think they got a reasonable shot. I certainly wouldn't want to bet the ranch on it because it's so difficult, but I like the Penguins a lot.
Kevin, for me, the Florida Panthers were one of the most surprising teams in the NHL last year, not just for winning the division, but making the playoffs. I didn't even think they were going to be a playoff team. And as far as the Florida Panthers and what they did on and off the ice, they were certainly one of the busiest teams, trading for Keith Yandel on the back end, signing Jason Demers, trading Eric Branson to the Vancouver Canucks for Jared McCann. They also signed guys like Colton Xavier and Jonathan Marchessault, who will be bottom six forwards for them. Do you think the Florida Panthers can repeat as division champions in the Atlantic Division? And do you think this team can go even further in the playoffs?
Well, I do not see them repeating as champions, just because I like you know, what Tampa Bay is all about, and we'll get to them in a minute. But, you know, I like the Panthers a lot, and I think they're still headed in the right direction. But I think their defense, it almost feels like we're running a pee and shell game back there. Like, I know why they made the moves they did. Heath Yandel is one of the better puck-moving defensemen in the league. But, you know, what happened, if you look at that defense, is we've lost Brian Campbell, who went to the Chicago Blackhawks, and Goodbrinson was traded to Vancouver, and, you know, as you mentioned. Kulikov was, you know, sent to Buffalo. Well, that's 50% of a unit that was really effective last season. So, you know, we're adding in Yandel and Demers. And then, you know, the big key in is, in there, and not a lot of people are talking about it, but to me it's crucial to how well they're going to play, is, you know, is Matheson ready to go? Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was played very well at the World Championships last spring, and I think they feel he's, you know, ready to take a step up. But, you know, I think we're going to have to see that unit play a little bit before we know they're going to be able to play, you know, at that, you know, at that same level. But, you know, I'm bullish on that team. I like, you know, they're young up front, and guys like Barkov and Huberto, Trocheck, you know, these are guys that are all getting better every day. And, you know, Barkov is just scratching the surface of his ability. So I think they're still a factor. I think they'll, you know, be right there near the top of the Atlantic Division. I think they're a factor in the playoffs. But I don't like them to win the division just because I'm so bullish on Tampa Bay.
From the playoffs to a team that you have not in the playoffs, and you just did your 2016-17 NHL projections, and then you had to follow that up by explaining your rationale. So clearly your email inbox was flooded from fans who didn't agree with you. But you have the Red Wings not making the playoffs for the first time in 26 years. Do you think that this would
you know, my regular readers know, you know, I live in the Detroit area, so I see a lot of the Red Wings, and I know that team pretty well. But, you know, I just see that they really wanted to improve their defense, and they were unable to do that. They really just couldn't find, you know, either the trade or the free agent signing that could make them significantly better. And I think they're very mediocre defensively, and maybe even below average, depending on what happens. So, you know, because of that, I just think in this league, you can't get by with mediocre defense. And the other element is that we don't know where their goaltending is at. Like, a year ago at this time, we thought Peter Mrazek had a chance to be in the top 10 goalies in the league. And now they're not even sure, is he going to be the number one goalie? I think he is. But, you know, he was discombobulated by the end of last season, and we didn't you know, really know if, you know, what the situation was going to be. Jimmy Howard is the veteran there, and he's had his own inconsistency problems. So I think because of that, I just think there's too many talented teams in the Eastern Conference. So I see them as on the outside looking in. Now, could they come back and surprise us? Well, sure. You know, if the Red Wings defense plays like the Devils defense did when they reached the finals a few seasons ago, you know, if Tatar and Nyquist have great seasons, if one of the younger players like Mantha, you know, steps up, if all of that occurs, then sure, they have a shot. But I don't believe that's going to happen. I think they're not going to make the playoffs.
Kevin Allen of USA Today joins us here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Kevin, is your dog agreeing with you or is disagreeing with you?
I believe that he must be a Red Wing fan because you know, either that or just someone's walking their dog in front of my house. That's probably the case.
So. Sounds like my dog would do the same thing as well. Kevin, we spoke about the Florida Panthers, and obviously that leads to their in-state rival, the Tampa Bay Lightning, a team that has all the pieces on paper. I mean, assuming they get the Nikita Kucherov thing settled and get him back in the lineup, it's hard to really pinpoint a reason why the Tampa Bay Lightning shouldn't be the Eastern Conference champion and potentially a Stanley Cup champion at the end of the 2016-17 season.
Well, I agree with you. I mean, you know, 25 playoff wins over the last two seasons, and they've got all of the elements that you need, and they have an embarrassment of riches in that. You know, what a problem they have. Like, you know, should they play Bishop or should they play Vasilevskiy? I mean, you know, it's a real good problem to have. And, you know, Stamkos isn't supposed to be there. He's supposed to be in Toronto. Isn't that the way it was supposed to go?
Yeah.
And he's still there. And, you know, Jonathan Drouin was supposed to be traded. And you know what? He's still there. And he's going to be better and a little more dynamic. And, you know, they can't possibly have as many injuries as they had last season. Victor Hedman's improved. Strawman, I think, is, even though we all kind of know who he is, I think he's still underrated. So they've got a lot going for him. I love the way Cooper approaches the game. And Yzerman is certainly in the top four or five general managers in the game, and his ability to analyze his team and make moves, you know, he takes a backseat to no one in that regard. So I'm bullish on them. I think they're going to be there at the end. I think they're capable of winning it all this season. I know they've got some teams that are certainly in their category as well. But I don't see too many flaws with this team. You'd like them to be a little bit stronger on defense. Their defense maybe was eroded a little bit. They moved up Matt Carl a little bit. They had to move him out because of salary considerations. But he was not a difference maker for that team. He was more of a depth guy. So I don't see any reason why the Lightning can't compete for the Stanley Cup.
Kevin, the Montreal Canadiens obviously made the biggest move of the offseason, trading P.K. Subban to the Nashville Predators for Shea Weber. They also brought back Alexander Radulov from the KHL. They traded for Andrew Shaw. They also traded out Lars Eller to the Washington Capitals. Are they a playoff team, in your opinion?
Oh, gosh, yes. I really think that they're going to make a significant move in the standings this season. I think Bergevin did a terrific job. Now, first and foremost, you know, Carey Price is healthy, and we saw that in the World Cup. And that's, you know, that's worth, in my mind, 15 points, you know, in the standings, to be sure. But what I really like is, and I'm among those who was critical of the Subban for Weber trade from a long-term perspective. I don't think there's any question that the Nashville Predators won that trade from the long term. They got the younger player. They got the more dynamic player with a big personality that I think will help them in Nashville. They got a relief in a contract situation. They got the better contract. But in the short run, this trade is perfect for the Montreal Canadiens because he's perfect for Therrien's coaching style. But more importantly, the Canadiens for the last few seasons have been easy to play against, and that's been an issue. And Shea Weber changes that along with Andrew Shaw. And now with you know them joining Gallagher, like you know playing against the Canadiens now is not going to be a picnic. It's going to be hard and it's going to not be fun. And I think those were brilliant moves. I think they needed to change their culture. They needed to change the way they played the game. And I think they're going to do that. And you know their other big problem was is they needed another go-to offensive guy, somebody that you could count on to score a big goal. Now, you know, I think the jury's out of whether Radulov is that guy, but I think there's a decent chance that he is. Maybe it's 50-50, maybe it's 60-40, but I think for the price they paid and over a short term, I thought that was a really good roll of the dice. This is not an Alexander Semin situation. Radulov has a better history of consistency in the KHL. So I like that team. I don't think they're there with the Tampa Bay Lightning, but I do think they're going to rise up and make the playoffs in the Atlantic.
Kevin Allen of USA Today is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're previewing the NHL's Eastern Conference. Kevin, they were the runaway winner last season of the President's Trophy. That, of course, they are the Washington Capitals. And then they fell out and lost early in the playoffs to the Pittsburgh Penguins. Most observers would look at the Capitals last season and their problem come playoff time was their depth on defense. They didn't really address that at all this offseason, only adding Lars Eller to their already talented group of forwards. Do you think that lack of defensive depth will come back to bite them again this season, playoff time?
Well, I mean, I think it's a fair question. The two questions I have about the team is are they quick enough to deal with the Penguins? I thought that was an issue. In that series. In fact, Barry Trotz alluded to it afterward. And, it's not the speed on offense that makes the Penguins effective. It's the speed that they utilize from a defensive ability. And that's what happened. The Capitals could never get their offense going because as soon as they got the puck, there was a Penguin right there. And I think that was an issue. And, as you said, they didn't really address that. The depth on their defense was tested by, injuries and so forth. And, that is an issue. I think they'll take a half step back because I just don't know. Because the second issue is whether Holtby, as much as I like him, how could he possibly duplicate what he did last season? So, I believe that. I don't think they're going to get 120 points. I think we're going to see them in about 104, 105. I think the Penguins can sort of move past them with the team they have and with the way the confidence they had from last season. So. Defensively, quickness-wise, whether or not they can have the same level of goaltending, I think they're still a quality team, but not probably as effective as they were during the last regular season.
Kevin, you mentioned earlier that you think the Montreal Canadiens are going to make the playoffs this year in the Eastern Conference. Is there any other team that didn't make the playoffs in the Eastern Conference last year that you think has a shot at making the playoffs this year?
There's certainly outside shots, for the Boston Bruins. I think even though the David Backes signing I thought was for a little too long you know, that gives them the potential to run three centers, Krejci, Bergeron, and Backes. If they can find a defenseman, and I haven't ruled that out yet, like, you know, everyone just assumes, like, okay, well, we've closed the door on the Bruins being able to find a defenseman. Well, you know, we could still see the Ducks move a defenseman. There could still be another trade or two. Let's not forget that, Johnny Boychuk got moved, right before the start of the season a couple years ago, and Nick Leddy. So, you know, if they could get a defenseman, I could see the Bruins doing it. And, there could be a surprise in the Metropolitan. I don't think so. I mean, I thought the Carolina Hurricanes played pretty well in the second half of the season. Actually, Cam Ward, even though everybody was stunned when he got re-signed, if you look at the way he played after the All-Star break, he was actually pretty good. I like their defense, and they've added some people there, but I don't know that they have enough. And it'll be interesting to see where the Devils are, because the Devils, really their only problem is they don't have any offense. And now, obviously, Hall is going to change that a little bit, and Pavel Zak, I think, will play a role. But he's going to be a rookie. So I don't think the Devils nor the Carolina Hurricanes have enough. The team that I see maybe taking a half step back in the Metro might be the New York Islanders. I like the Andrew Ladd signing. I think he'll be a good fit for Tavares, but they lost so many guys, and the biggest loss was Franz Nielsen. Franz Nielsen was a very, very important player for that Islanders team. He did so many different things for that team, and they just can't replace him. And for that reason, I think if there's a team that could fall out, I think it's the Islanders. But I'm not sure that I see that there's anybody in that Metro that is poised to skate at lightning speed beyond the Islanders.
By the way, Kevin, your dog stopped barking, so that I guess he's agreeing with you now.
I guess so. I mean, he must like my analysis of the Metro division. He obviously did not like my analysis of the Atlantic division.
Kevin, we'll let you go on this last question, and it's the cliche final question that you get from lots of different radio interviews right before the season starts. Your two conference champions, and then who you think is going to be holding Lord Stanley's Cup come next June.
Well, I'm going with the Tampa Bay Lightning as the team. I think they've learned a lot with all those victories in the playoffs of the last two seasons, and I think they've sort of got it all together, and I expect we might see a pretty strong move from Yzerman at the trade deadline, because I think he knows how close he is. And then in the West, I'm actually going with the Dallas Stars. And again, I'm doing that in anticipation that the two goaltenders that we see in Dallas will not be their playoff goalies. I think that Jim Neal is going to wait till we get close to the trade deadline, and I think there'll be some goalies available because of the pending expansion draft, and I think we'll see another goalie. And their offense is so good, and I think their defense is improving. So I'm going to go with a final of Dallas and Tampa, and I think I'm picking the Lightning to win it all.
I don't think anybody would be shocked if one of those goaltenders on the Dallas Stars is a former Tampa Bay goaltender in Ben Bishop, given his pending unrestricted free agency and the upcoming NHL expansion draft. That would be a very interesting dynamic, but of course we have to wait till June before that becomes a reality. Kevin Allen of USA Today, always appreciate your time and analysis. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
All right, thank you.
Take
Bye-bye.
Care, Kevin.
Thanks a lot, Kevin.
Break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, we'll look at the Metropolitan Division.